Hi, everybody. My name is Tanya, and I am an alcoholic. TA Morning Serenity is my home group. Ah, there's some of you here, thank goodness. My mouth is really dry, and I have to pee. Happily, we have some water up here. I've been really nervous about this. I've done the third step about 15 times today, hoping it would work. Did any of you see the full moon last night? I was driving home, and it was rising over the Kahului Harbor, this big, huge, orange ball in the sky, and the sky was clear, and it took my breath away. And I thought, 19 and a half years ago, I didn't have the ability to appreciate anything like that. I wasn't aware of the full moon, and I had forgotten how sweet the air is here, how good it smells at night, and how it feels against my skin. And today I can appreciate those things. Being sober, being a recovered alcoholic, working the steps, and going through all the things I've gone through has given me these small, beautiful moments, if I can remember to stop and appreciate them. And those are some of the things that I really love about being sober. But when I came into AA 19 and a half years ago, I was young then, number one, and I was beaten, thank God. I was at my bottom, and the only thing I could think of was how can I end my life and do it in a nice, neat, and tidy way, because, I hated to leave a mess behind. And that's a lot different from the way that it is today. I started drinking when I was 17 years old. I got drunk for the first time the summer after I graduated from high school on a date with the captain of the football team, whom I'd had a terrible crush on all through high school. And I met him again at a high school reunion a few years ago, and the guy was a complete jerk. But when I was 17, he was the man of my dreams. And we went to a dance. And he had some liquor, and the people I was with had some liquor. And I was not inexperienced in liquor. My mother was an alcoholic. I was living at the time in an alcoholic home. And I felt very well informed about alcoholism and what it could do. And I knew, after watching my mother disintegrate before my eyes and watching my family life disintegrate before my eyes, that I would never, ever drink like she drank. And I didn't. I drank differently than she drank. But I drank nonetheless, and so I was not, all that self-knowledge I thought I had did not arm me at all. And when I took my first drink, I was a goner. That first night really epitomizes what my drinking was like. I got very, very drunk on I know not what. I think it was rum and something, but who cares? I didn't care, certainly. I drank a lot of it because I was a pig when I drank. And I always drank a lot throughout my drinking career. And I passed out, and that was something else that I continued to do throughout my drinking career. I passed out. I came to buttoning my blouse in the back of his, I think it was a Woody. I'm a child of the 60s. And I was buttoning my blouse, and I thought, I was deeply ashamed. I was horrified. I didn't remember anything that had happened. And I thought, here I have just experienced a rite of passage, and I don't remember anything about it. And I was really, really ashamed of myself. And I thought, probably I would never do that again. But of course, I couldn't wait to do it again. And I did it over and over and over and over again. with lots and lots and lots of men. And some women, I think. I mean, my memory's not too good of my drinking. I mean, my memory's not too good anyway now, because I'm a lot older, but, you know, trying to remember the way that it was, I was a blackout drinker. And in the last 6 years that I drank, I drank on a daily basis, and I tried not to be a blackout drinker, but I was just a pig. I just would drink all of the time. And by the time I moved to Hawaii in 1975, I was a daily drinker, and I had... Really, I was on a geographic, what turned out to be, mercifully, my last geographic, and I had pretty much been around the world drinking. And, you know, now, after being sober for a while, it's like that was another person. You know, it doesn't feel like that was me, because I have been, in that cliched term, reborn in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't feel like that woman that I was 19 years ago, but every once in a while I have this experience that will like strike it home in my heart what it was like. And one of those experiences was that I got, after being sober a couple of years, I met, you know, Boy Wonder on AA campus, and we got engaged. And I had never been engaged before, except for once I got engaged briefly to a cocaine dealer. And we ran away on one of his buys to Central America, and of course it didn't work out, and it was a big mess, and, you know, and that was the only, and he had, I think, he had proposed to me after doing a tarot reading or something, and so that was it. And this was a real engagement, and he engaged, and he asked me to marry him, and I said yes, and I was very excited. This was my first marriage, and hopefully my last marriage. And then I thought, oh, shit. I'm going to have to clean up a little bit of wreckage of my past, because I had been at one point or other in my early 20s on the lam, so to speak, with a guy who was running from the FBI, and we ran away to Canada, and we got caught, and they kicked us out of the country, and in order to stay, we married Canadian citizens, and it was purely a marriage of convenience, and then I did that, and then I came back, and I drank some more, and I moved to Hawaii, and like, who remembers this stuff? So he proposes to me, and I gotta go get a divorce, because if I don't get a divorce, I'm gonna be a bigamist. So I go to the attorney, it's gonna be a simple thing, I go to the attorney, and he's sitting there with his pen and pencil taking down the data and telling me what I gotta do, and he says, okay, now what was his name? And I'm going, let's just give me a moment. And I'll never forget the way he looked at me. It was like, what planet are you from? I mean, how can this happen? And I had to sit there and think, and I could remember his first name, and I could recall his face, but I could not remember his last name, and without his last name, I could not divorce him. So I was in a real pickle, and I had to meditate on it, and it finally came to me. Thank goodness for step 11. But I was struck. I mean, it's nuts that I couldn't remember this person who had really done me a huge favor, and that, you know, I had lived not with him, but in and around him for a couple of years, and I couldn't recall his name. A few years later, when I was about 10 years sober, and now I'm really feeling like a different person, I went with my new husband, newish husband, and we went back to where I had lived before I moved to Hawaii, and I had one friend left there, and I had lived in this kind of commune situation. And I did that a lot when I was in my younger years, when I was drinking. And so we were having dinner, and I had introduced him to my new husband, and, you know, I had done a lot of drinking and drugging when I lived in this commune with this fellow, and we were reminiscing, and he was telling me about so-and-so. And I said, gee, you know, I know the name. The name's familiar, but I just can't recall his face. And he looked at me, and he said, but you lived with him for 6 months. And I went, oh, shit.
I am really an alcoholic. I am a blackout drinker. I lived with a person, with a human being, a three-dimensional character, for 6 months, and I could not honestly recall his face. That meant that, you know, I did his laundry, we had conversations, we probably had sex, who knows, and I couldn't recall his face. And I was reminded of how sick I really was, how horribly hurtful that is, and what a horribly hurtful person I was when I was drinking. And those things clutch at my heart. They make me feel ashamed all over again of who I was when I was drinking and of the things that I did. So I did a lot of crazy things. I came to Hawaii, as I told you on my last geographic. I was a single most of my life and prided myself on my individuality, all that kind of stuff. But periodically I would take a hostage, and I came to Hawaii with a hostage whom I had been trying to get rid of, and I could not. And I had given him an ultimatum and said, you know, I'm going to Hawaii, and if you can get it together by such and such a date, you can come with me. And I knew he couldn't do it. And then he did it. And there I was, stuck with him on Maui. But it didn't take long for me to get rid of him. Whereupon I loved Hawaii from the moment I set foot off the plane onto the tarmac. And in those days, you deplaned on the tarmac. I loved the way the air felt on my skin. I loved the way the air smelled. I just loved everything about it, and I knew that I was home. But I had a lot of drinking left, and I had a lot of other things that I had to do, and I proceeded to do them for the next 6 years. And if it were possible, I even further degraded myself. Finally, I had taken another hostage, and this was the one. This was the guy. He was a normal person. He was a wine connoisseur. I really liked that. And in fact, I liked it so much that I switched liquors. I had been drinking a lot of hard liquor. I never did develop a taste for liquor. I never liked the taste. I always drank for the effect. And I tried to learn how to, you know, sample wine, but I never did learn how to do that. And I would simply drink it like I drank everything else. By the gallon. And I remember during this period, this is getting towards the end of my drinking, that I made, you know, I wasn't one of those people like chapter three where I, you know, tried to stop drinking all the time. I never wanted to. I just wanted to drink. I loved it. Even when I couldn't remember it, I loved it. It was cool. I liked it when I liked to drive and drink. I like to date and drink. I like to work and drink. I like to do everything and drink. And so I never really tried to quit, but I had one moment of clarity a couple of years before I finally came into AA, when I decided that I was drinking too much tequila and that something happened when I drank tequila. I always ended up in a fight with somebody. And, you know, I'm 5'2", I weighed 100 pounds. I had no business getting in a fight with anybody, but I would fight you, man or woman. I didn't care when I was drinking, and I was really very obnoxious. And so I finally connected those two things in my head, and so I decided that tequila was the problem, and so I switched to white wine. And the only problem was that I had to drink a lot more white wine to get the kind of high that I got with a couple of three or four or five or six straight shots of tequila. And so I drank it by the gallon, and I lived in a small town. Just at that time it was a small town, and I was very conscious of the quantity that I was drinking, and I had to be careful how I made my purchases so that nobody else knew the quantity that I was drinking. And so I did that dance, that game. I can remember one moment before I really hit bottom, when it dawned on me that maybe I had a problem. And I was with this same hostage I had, and he was the guy. I was going to marry him. He had a family, and I knew all the family, and we all drank together. And somehow my drinking got to him, and so we were separated at the time. And I couldn't believe that anybody didn't want to be around me. I just knew that it was another woman. It couldn't be me. It had to be that he had another girlfriend. So I was sitting up in my apartment playing, you know, bluesy old Barbra Streisand tunes or something, weeping away and drinking away, and I decided, that son of a bitch is with another woman, I just know it. So I got in my car, and it's maybe 11, 12 o'clock at night, and I said, I'm going to go down there and find out for sure. He wasn't far from me, I drove down to his house, and he lived right on the coast, right on the ocean. And we had a dog, and I knew the dog was in the back, so I couldn't go in the backyard because I knew the dog would be there and would see me. So I decided I have to go along the front. Well, in order to go along the front meant that I had to slosh through the surf, down two or three, start at one end, go in front of two or three houses, and come in through the front of the property. So I did that, drunk as a skunk. So no full moon. I mean, it was black. And I'm sloshing through the surf. I finally get to his house. I sneak up there like a thief in the night. And I peek into his window. And he wasn't doing anything. There was nobody there. He was all by himself, just reading. And I felt like a complete and utter fool. And I thought, now how in the hell am I going to get out of here without him discovering what a complete fool and ass that I've made of myself? I wonder if my drinking has anything to do with this. Well, that went right out of my head. Of course not. That couldn't possibly be true. And so I turned around and I sneaked back out to the coast and into the water and, you know, skulked my way down the coastline and got into my car and feeling like a real idiot. And I was at a stop sign and I looked both ways, and of course I wasn't really looking both ways because I was mulling over this scene in my head. And I just kind of let my foot off the pedal and my car drifted into the intersection. And just as I did that, I looked to my right and here was a big white light coming at me really fast. And it was a motorcycle. I had pulled out in front of a guy on a motorcycle. And in order to avoid hitting me broadside, he had to lay his motorcycle down and skid around in front of me. And I nearly killed him. I got out of my car and went over to him and asked him if he was all right, fully expecting he would call the police. And this was it for me. They were going to take me away at last. And he got up and said, I'm not hurt, and got on his motorcycle and drove away. And I was floored. I had almost killed somebody, and it really, really scared the shit out of me. But it didn't scare me enough to stop drinking. I kept on drinking. I reconciled with that hostage, and we moved in together again, and we continued to drink. And one night, we were drinking with his family, and I got into a big fight with his mother, and I told her to get the blankety-blank out of my house and don't ever come back. And I was roaring drunk when I did that, and she did. And a little while later, he left me a note. And the note said, basically, you are making my life so miserable that I can't stand it anymore. You have to go. And I was crushed. I was devastated. And I'm so very glad that he wrote me that letter because it brought me to my bottom. There was absolutely no way that I could not face the truth of the matter. I was a miserable, mean-spirited person, and I had hurt the person that I most loved in my life. And so I moved out. I went on a drinking spree. For the next 3 months, I drank. Well, I was already drinking round the clock, but now I just drank round the clock more. I drank and I drank and I drank and I worked and I drank and I drove and I drank and I passed out, and I just did it over and over and over again. And then I began to contemplate suicide. How could I do it? My life was so miserable. I was so miserable. I did not have a friend left in the world. There was not another single human being that I could call up and say, I'm in trouble. I need help. There's something wrong with me, even though I knew there was something wrong with me. I decided that I was having a mental breakdown. And I was having a mental breakdown. But it didn't have anything to do with my drinking, of course. And so I decided that I needed help, and I looked in the Yellow Pages, and I found a psychologist. And I made an appointment. And I went to tell him all my emotional and mental troubles. And I can remember sitting in his office in front of this complete stranger, just crying and sobbing and him handing me a box of tissues, and starts to ask me questions about my drinking. And I remember feeling so puzzled. Why? I've got real problems here. Why is he asking me about my drinking? Well, I realized later that I probably just reeked. I oozed. My tissues were soaked in alcohol. Every cell in my body was soaked in alcohol, and I probably just stank to high heaven. But at the time, I felt he was very unprofessional and probably didn't know what he was doing. And he queried me, "How much do you drink?" "Well, you know, glass, maybe 2 glasses of wine a day." I left out the half gallon that I drank every day, and he asked me a bunch of other, I learned later he was asking me the 20 questions. Well, I lied about every single solitary answer that I gave. I never did tell him the truth. And when I was finished answering him his questions, he said, "Well," he said, "I don't think you're an alcoholic." And I thought, geez, that's a relief. You're the professional. You ought to know. And then in the next breath, he said, "But if you think you may have a problem with alcohol," and for I don't know what reason, those words just sort of rang in my head, "but if you think you may have a problem with alcohol," and somehow I knew that was it. And he told me about an AA meeting 3 days hence. And he suggested that I go to it. And I said, okay, I would. And actually, I would have done anything that he asked me to do. It wouldn't have mattered what he asked me to do at that point. I was so miserable. But I had a 3-day reprieve, and so I spent those 3 days drinking. And I can remember sitting in a bar with a guy that I had known, kind of a drinking buddy that I knew from around the bars, and he was in bad shape. He had liver problems, and he was really sick, and we all knew it. And I spent one night talking to him in the bar about how he needed to stop drinking and go to AA. I mean, what the hell did I know about it? But I knew everything, I thought. Even when I wanted to kill myself, I knew everything. So I went to this AA meeting. Wasn't anything like I expected. My recollection of it is not very good. I, for years, told the story that I went to this AA meeting. It was outdoors. It was on the beach. It was gorgeous, which is all true. And that I sat next to this guy and that I was shaking really bad and that he went and got me a coffee, which I spilled. And so, and I told this story for years, and I heard that story for years in AA. Everybody talks about those stories, and I wanted to belong in the worst way. And finally, about 10 years later, he was in a meeting I was sharing this about with, and he came up to me after the meeting, and he says, "You know, that never happened." And I said, "Really? Really? It wasn't that way? Tell me what it was like." And so he told me what I was really like when I first came into AA, and I had to change that whole story. But he 12-stepped me for the first couple of days. When I came into AA, I weighed 100 pounds. I weigh 125 now. I thought I looked good, but I was really kind of gaunt. I hadn't eaten in at least 3 or 4 days. I think I had had a banana, and I had done nothing but drink, and I was very, very shaky. I cried for the first 3 weeks, but I'll tell you, once I came into that AA meeting, I have never looked back. I'd like to tell you that I stayed sober and never had another problem, but I did stay sober, but I had lots of problems. And I had a lot of funny feelings about AA. In the beginning, I was suspicious of AA. I was suspicious because they talked about God, and I didn't have any religious training, and I had done a lot of investigating about various and sundry religions and philosophy, but I didn't have any beliefs of my own. I was purely a spectator and a skeptic, really. And so but I had occasionally drifted into the clutches of the odd cult now and then. And I knew that in these cult-type situations, there was always a hook. And when I heard them talk about God in the rooms, I thought, aha, this is the hook. And so I had reservations. On the other hand, I had no place else to go. It wasn't like there were any treatment centers around, which there weren't. I had no place else to go, and I so wanted it to work. I didn't want to be an alcoholic, but what I felt in that first meeting was what Chrissy talked about. I felt hope. And I hadn't felt that for a really, really long time. And after that meeting, I used to remember it as this crush of people coming towards me. But probably there was one or two people that came up to me after the meeting and gave me a phone number, and somebody shoved a big book under my arm and said, "Read this. And if you feel like you're going to drink, call me and eat some candy or ice cream." And I thought, candy or ice cream? They know a lot about drinking, but they don't know shit about nutrition. So I had a lot of reservations, but I didn't have any place else to go. So I just took all those reservations because I thought I can always leave. And I just did what people told me. I put them all up on the shelf because they told me I could have my misery back in 90 days if it didn't work. So I put all that stuff on the shelf and I abandoned myself to the fellowship. And God, I'm so grateful that I was too beaten to argue very much. I really wanted what you had because in spite of all my reservations, I saw this wonderful light in your life, and I saw people who were laughing over their troubles, and I sensed this unconditional love, and I could feel the bond that people had in AA, and I wanted to be a part of that in the worst way. And so I did everything that I was asked. I did absolutely everything that I was asked. And I was single. I was 35. I was done taking hostages. I thought, I'm just going to be a single woman in AA, and that's going to be just fine. And that's what I did. People told me to stick with the winners, and when I looked around, the winners were in service. And so I got into service. And I have stayed in service all of my sober life, and if it weren't for general service and my participation in it, I wouldn't be standing here tonight, because it kept me coming when I didn't want to come. Kept me talking to people that I didn't like. I got a sponsor fairly quickly. In the first 2 or 3 weeks that I was sober, I got a sponsor. I was scared to death that she would tell me no when I asked her. But I got up enough courage, and I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said yes. And, oh, God, I was so incredibly thrilled. And I started working the steps. I had a lot of trouble with step two. Didn't have any trouble with step one, but I had a lot of trouble with step two because I wasn't sure about the... And so that's what I hung on to. I did the third step to the best of my ability, and then I launched out on my fourth and fifth steps. And I was afraid to do it, and I talked to a lot of people about doing it and did some research, but I ended up doing it like it was done in the book because that's what my sponsor told me to do. I did use that format. And my first inventory was basically all about my resentments. But my sponsor did a couple of things that helped me a lot. And one of the things that she did was before we started, she took my hands across the table and we bowed our heads and she said a prayer. And she, in her prayer, asked God to remove all memory of this fifth step. And that put me so at ease because I was afraid that we weren't really anonymous and that this was going to get around, you know. And so I lacked trust, and that put me at ease. And then I told her my life story, really. And I told her about the people that had hurt me. And some stuff came up that I really thought was handled, stuff about my mother, the alcoholic, who's now recovering, and stuff that I thought I had handled on any one of hundreds of LSD trips that I had taken in my youth, and stuff about the baby that I had had at 21 and given up for adoption. And I thought that was handled. I really thought that I
I was okay with that, but there it was on that first inventory, and I didn't know it was there. I was so shocked when it came out. And she shared stuff with me about her life, and this business of doing a fourth and a fifth step was a transforming experience for me. It was a revelation for me to look at myself, because I was a person that always looked at you. I was very glib. I could just center in on what your defects were, and I knew that you wanted my constructive criticisms or opinions or whatever they were. I was very clear about that, and I was especially clear when I had a few drinks and a line of cocaine in me. But I had never, ever looked at myself. I had never looked for my own patterns. I had never, ever acknowledged that almost my entire life was based on fear. Fears that were nameless, fears that I could name. I mean, I was just a big ball of fear. And I shared all of that. And my experience was like it talks about in the Big Book. I felt as though a huge burden had been lifted. And the other thing that experience did for me is I really felt that I had, as it talks about in the Big Book, taken a big bite out of the truth about myself. And that finally I belonged, because I had done some of the very difficult things that I had heard so many others share about in AA, and that maybe I was going to be able to stay. I had lived through it. After so much fear about doing it, I had lived through the experience. And it was fantastic. So I did my thing in AA. I wanted to talk a little bit. I went back later. I told you that I kind of slipped over the third step, and I went back later and I did a third step. When I was two and a half years sober, I was engaged. I had met this newcomer, and the first time I saw him, he was tall, he was really thin. He described himself as having a full beard, but he really had kind of a patchy, scratchy, not very nice beard. He had a Pall Mall hanging out the side of his mouth, and the smoke was kind of, you know, drifting up into his eye, which is squinted. He had on this old ratty T-shirt with holes in it and a pair of urine-stained dungarees. And I was sober a year, and I knew everything, and I looked at him, and I said, these newcomers, this guy will never make it. So 2 years later, we were engaged. And we had done a lot of work around that. We had worked with our sponsors. We had done the steps. And we had decided that we wanted, the thing that I loved about him and what attracted me then, and the thing that I love about him and attracts me to him now, is that he loves AA like I love AA. He serves AA like I serve AA. It's foremost in his life. And we decided that we were going to make